We're continuing our study in the book of Judges. And even though I asked Ashley tonight about how our class schedule went for the rest of this quarter, and what he told me gave me an extra week, because our last class in this Wednesday night will be on April 1st. But in looking, that still didn't help me enough, because I'm still pretty sure that we're not going to finish this book before the quarter's over. But we're going to do the best, and as I told Sean earlier, that back when I was teaching school, I'd always tell the students, the goal of this class is not to finish the textbook. If we do, fine, and if we don't, fine. Well, I'm going to tell y'all the same thing. Our goal is not to finish the book of Judges. It would be nice if we could, but time is probably not going to allow. And the second thing I wanted to let you know before we get started, if any of you have questions about this one thing that I'm going to mention, I would ask you to just fold them up and put them in your pocket, because we're not going to talk about ephods tonight. And we're going to move right on and into chapter 9 of Judges and talk about Abimelech. And as we mentioned, I think the first night of this class, I made the point that when people are counting the judges, a lot have a tendency to list Abimelech as one of the judges. That's not my tendency. I think that he was not a judge in the same sense that the others we've talked about up until now are. He was not appointed by God. He was self-appointed, sort of. At least he volunteered for this, and he was put in such a position. But Abimelech, while I believe strongly, was not a judge in the sense that the others were, he was a king. And again, not in the same sense that the other kings were, starting with after the judges were over, and starting with Saul, he was not a king even after, in that sense, because as best I can understand, even though he was appointed king by the men of Shechem, he was not king of the entire nation of Israel. Probably, and I can't tell you which tribes exactly, but predominantly with those tribes in the northern part of Israel. And so in that sense he was not king of the entire nation of Israel. But he was a king, and we'll talk about that a little more in a moment. But when you're counting the judges, I strongly suggest that you leave this individual out, because he didn't fit the requirements of a judge. He didn't, just look at all the things that the judges did once God had recognized them. They had been sinful in their practices, and they did evil in the sight of the Lord, and they were taken over in most cases by a foreign nation, the Philistines, and we could list all of those armies of those nations of the Canaanites, and they cried out, and this went on for several years in most cases, and they cried out because they were being persecuted and they were being punished, and so they cried out to the Lord, and they expressed that they were sorry for all the sins they'd committed, and so going back, the Lord appointed a judge. The judge delivered them from the hands of these enemies, and they had peace. I think the number that probably is most prominent, and I don't know if I didn't check to see if there are any of the others longer, but in some cases, as with Gideon, they had peace for 40 years. And then, whether it be Gideon or some other judge, that judge died. And very quickly, the people again did evil in the sight of the Lord. And they were taken over by one of the foreign nations, one of the Canaanite nations in most cases. But they cried out, and God appointed a judge. They were delivered, and then the same cycle over and over and over again, almost without fail. And like I said, the verse that you'll read, you can almost copy it. Do a copy and paste from one to the other, because it says almost the same thing. they again did evil in the sight of the Lord, and you know the rest. But we talked last week at the end of chapter 8 that verse 33, and we'll read those first three verses there, said, "So it was as soon as Gideon was dead that the children of Israel again played the harlot with the Baals and made Baal-berith their god. Thus the children of Israel did not remember the Lord their God, who had delivered them from the hands of all their enemies on every side. Nor did they show kindness to the house of Jerubbaal, Gideon, in accordance with the good he had done for Israel." So even though I said we weren't going to talk about this, we're just going to mention this word. Even though Gideon caused the children of Israel, or they did, whether he caused it totally or not, caused them to worship this ephod, Gideon did much good for the children of Israel, delivered them from the hands of the Canaanite nation, King Jabin. He delivered them from that. And he did much good for the children of Israel, but were said, they did not show kindness to his house in accordance with the good he had done for Israel. And certainly, while he was not perfect, and I think that could be said of all the judges, he did much good. He delivered them. And he brought peace to the nation of Israel for 40 years. But it seems not only did they quickly forget the Lord, the Israelite nation quickly forgot Gideon and what he had done for them. Because in accordance with the good that he had done for Israel, they didn't show kindness to him. Anyone have a question or comment before we proceed into chapter 9? Gideon had a son by a concubine, and this son was named Abimelech. Now, I guess you could count counting Abimelech. Gideon had 71 sons. Now, did this concubine bear any more children to Gideon? We don't know. These are the numbers that I'm confident in. Not saying there weren't any more, but Gideon bore 70 sons. And Abimelech, being number 71, that a concubine that he had bore for him. So Abimelech's mother was in Shechem. She was one of the citizens of Shechem. And so this son, Abimelech, went to his mother's brothers. Now, with these, I don't know how many there were. As was the custom during that time, it was probably a fairly large number. Now, was it as many as 70? I don't know. 20, 30, have no idea. But Abimelech went to his mother's brothers in Shechem. And he asked them, "Is it better that all 70 of Gideon's sons reign over them, or would it be better that one reigned over them?" And I don't know if he gave them any details to that question or not. I think just knowing that, if I were one of them, it would have been my answer that it'd be better to just have one than 70. Can you imagine having 70 kings in a nation that ruled over the people? And his question was this: was it better to have all 70 of Gideon's sons, or that you have just one? And they agreed to follow Abimelech. And they said, "He is our brother. He is our brother." Now the 70 sons of Gideon were not their brothers. They weren't brothers to these men of Shechem that were brothers to Abimelech. So they said, "We'll follow Abimelech because he's our brother." And basically, he's our brother. These other 70 are not. And so they gave Abimelech money. And we're told, and I read a number of translations, and they all come back to this same thing. But what the New King James says is they gave Abimelech money with which he hired worthless and reckless men to follow him. There are a lot of other words you could use to describe them, but I think when the scriptures say worthless and reckless men, we get a good picture of who these men were that he hired to follow him. And so that's what he did with the money. And what these worthless and reckless men did, along with Abimelech, is they killed the 70, I may have said brothers a moment ago about Gideon, but these were 70 sons of Gideon. They killed the 70 sons. No, that's right. I'm a little confused here. These were the sons of Gideon, as was Abimelech. So in that sense, we would call them, I guess, half-brothers of Abimelech. But they killed the 70 of those on one stone. And you know, when I think about that and I try to picture that, it's a pretty gory sight. And I don't know if they used an axe or what they used to kill them, but if they killed them on a stone, I would say they either put their head across the stone and bashed it in, or they used an axe or something to cut their heads off, to behead them. That was fairly common in Old Testament times, so I have it pictured that that's the way they were killed. So they slew, actually not 70, they slew 69 of Gideon's sons on the same stone, save one, Jotham. And I don't know where Jotham fell on that list of 70, the oldest, the youngest, but I think from everything I read, if he wasn't the youngest, he was down in that area. He was close to the youngest at least. Does Scripture say youngest? Okay. I don't know what scholar I was reading today, but he said his point was a point I made a moment ago. If there were other children, either sons or daughters, of Gideon and his wife, that would have made a little exception, but as you just said, verse 5, that he was the youngest. Okay, and I overlooked this obviously when I was reading through it earlier today. He went to his father's house at Ophir and killed his brothers, the 70 sons of Jerubbaal, on one stone, but Jotham, the youngest son of Jerubbaal, was left because he hid himself. So Jotham hid himself. I guess he saw what was coming or saw what was happening and they didn't see him, but anyway, he hid himself. And following that, all the men of Shechem gathered together and they made Abimelech king. There in verse 6. They went and made Abimelech king beside the terebinth tree at the pillar that was in Shechem. So Abimelech truly was a king. They made him king. Now, did the Lord approve of this? If he did, no one knows. And I'm thinking that this was not approved by God. But they nevertheless made him king. So in that sense, he was a king. And like I said, this was all the men of Shechem made him their king. And likely this territory, if you will, over which he was, or over which he reigned as king, was not the entire nation of Israel, but it was in the northern part of that particular nation. And so Abimelech was made king. And so I guess if someone asks you the question, who was the first king of Israel? My answer, again, would be Saul, but if somebody wanted to get technical, I guess they could say it was Abimelech. I choose to think that even though he was a king in a sense, he was not a king that God approved of. So anyone have a question or comment, Larry?
I can't get it straight in my head. Was he king over all Israel after he killed these 70 Israelites, or just over this area around Shechem?
Well, everything that I read indicated that he would have been king over part of the northern region. Now, where those boundaries are, I wasn't able to find out, but that it was it involved only the northern part of the country. He was not a king in the same sense as Saul or David or Solomon. He was not a king in that sense over the entire nation of Israel. Now, if you'd ask Abimelech at the time, he probably would have said he was. I don't know, but I suspect he at least pretended to be, or he thought he was. But he, in looking how he started this, I think he tended to think of himself a little more highly than he ought. So, but I'm convinced he was not king over the entire nation. Anyone else? Question or comment before we move on?
Verse 18 says king over the men of Shechem.
Yeah. Son of his female servant, king over the men of Shechem. And again, because he is your brother. And that was the main reason that they gave for following Abimelech or yielding to Abimelech's wishes rather than not, was because they were brothers. Anyone else? John?
I think it's interesting that Abimelech has aligned himself, and the men of Shechem have aligned themselves with idols and false gods. They got the money from the temple of Baal. Yeah. They made him king under a pillar, which is also going to be an idol that was set up in the middle of Shechem. So he has aligned himself against God, become God's enemy. Everything he and they have done have been with false gods.
Absolutely. And it was like both Abimelech and these men of Shechem that we read about here, they unashamedly worshipped these idols. And the temple they had was the temple of the idols. They didn't have any problem with that. But it seems that and Abimelech basically usurped whatever throne, whatever the extent of the throne he had was, it was usurped by him. It was not approved by God. And I guess how ridiculous it seems to me that here he wanted to be king even over a part of the nation of Israel, God's chosen people, when he didn't even claim to worship God. Not only did he not claim to, he didn't. He and his subjects, if you will, worshiped idols. But yet, he thought it was okay for him to be king. Anyone else?
I said that, and then verse 22 says, after he had reigned over Israel for a year.
Yeah. He was king in whatever sense it was. This was 3 years. And most of the judges we read about were in that position of judge, even for longer than that. And they had a brief period to overcome those who had captured Israel and put them into various degrees of slavery. When they overcame that, there was peace for a number of years. In the case of Gideon, in the case of others, 40 years. Well, Abimelech didn't have that to fall back on to say, look what we did. Because when the battles began, and this wasn't even a foreign nation that had enslaved Israel, it was part of their own, if you will, the men of Shechem. Then, beginning with verse 7, it says, when they told Jotham, he went and stood on top of Mount Gerizim and lifted his voice and cried out. So Jotham, the only one of the 70 who was left, when he heard of this, he went to a place that was, it seems to me, was not easily accessible. He didn't want these men of Shechem to be able to reach out and snatch him during these comments he had. But he cried out and he asked them basically if they had acted in truth and sincerity in killing Gideon's 70 sons on one stone. In other words, Jotham was saying, did you do right when you killed my 69 brothers? Did you act in truth and sincerity. And he said, if you did, you should rejoice in Abimelech, because Abimelech is rightly king. You did right in killing them and in making Abimelech king. You did that in truth and sincerity. And I doubt that any of them answered in the affirmative to his question. If they did, they lied. Because in all truth and sincerity, they could not answer that way. And he said, if not, if you didn't act in truth and sincerity, let fire come from Abimelech and devour the men of Shechem, and from the men of Shechem, let fire come and devour Abimelech. If what you did was right, if it was in truth and in sincerity, then pat Abimelech on the back and congratulate him and say, we're glad you're our king. But if not, just the opposite. We're going to read a little of this and make some points here, beginning with verse 7. And the heading in my Bible says, the parable of the trees. And Jotham asks a series of questions. It says, when they had told Jotham, he went and stood at the top of Mount Gerizim, what I just read. He lifted up his voice, cried out, and he said to them, listen to me, you men of Shechem, that God may listen to you. The trees once went forth to anoint a king over them. And I think we pick up very quickly that Jotham's not talking about trees. But the trees went forth to anoint a king over them, and they said to the olive tree, reign over us. But the olive tree said to them, should I cease giving my oil, with which they honor God and men, and go to sway over trees? Then the trees said to the fig tree, you come and reign over us. But the fig tree said to them, should I cease my sweetness and my good fruit and go and sway over the trees? Then the trees said to the vine, you come and reign over us. But the vine said to them, should I cease my new wine, which cheers both God and men, and go sway over trees? And so then they got down to what we would call today, they got down to the bottom of the barrel. And it says, then all the trees said to the bramble. Well, I don't know, but I've never considered a bramble a tree. It may get that big sometimes, but they said to the bramble, you come and reign over us. And the bramble said to the trees, if in truth you anoint me as king over you, then come and take shelter in my shade. But if not, let fire come out of the bramble and devour the cedars of Lebanon. And so, looking at this parable, those trees, these individuals, I think we can assume, those that had any honor about them knew they had their role in. And they did not desire, and they didn't think they should be made king over them. But when it got down to the bramble, he said, come and take shelter in my shade. The bramble was fully willing to fulfill that role, even though, it seems to me he obviously didn't qualify. So that's when he asked the questions, if you acted in truth and sincerity, and have done to Gideon as he deserves. He said, for my father fought for you, risked his life, and delivered you out of the hand of Midian. Verse 17. But you have risen up against my father's house this day and killed his 70 sons on one stone and made Abimelech, the son of his female servant, king over the men of Shechem, because he is your brother. If then you have acted in truth and sincerity with his house this day, then rejoice in Abimelech and let him also rejoice in you. But if not, let fire come. As we said, let fire come from Abimelech and devour the men of Shechem. From the men of Shechem and devour Abimelech. In verse 21, we're told, and Jotham ran away and fled, and he went to Beer and dwelt there for fear of Abimelech his brother, his half-brother, but nevertheless identified him as his brother. But then, and every time I had this in my notes, and every time I see this statement, I think of Lieutenant Dan, when right on the shrimp boat, and they said, "And then God showed up." Well, that's what happened here. And then God showed up. And God would have his way in this. And it says, after Abimelech had reigned, this is the verse that Josh was talking about. After Abimelech had reigned over Israel 3 years, God sent a spirit of ill will between Abimelech and the men of Shechem, and the men of Shechem dealt treacherously with Abimelech. And I suspect if soon after this had occurred, if you had asked Abimelech and if you had asked the men of Shechem why there was a spirit of ill will between them, probably neither side could have answered that. But because God did this, this was God's will that this spirit of ill will should come up between these men who had made Abimelech king and Abimelech himself. It says that the crime done to the 70 sons of Jerubbaal might be settled and their blood be laid on Abimelech, their brother, who killed them, and on the men of Shechem, who aided him in the killing. In verse 25, we're told the men of Shechem set men in ambush against him on the tops of the mountains, and they robbed all who passed by them along the way, and it was told Abimelech. So basically, God played one side against the other. This is this spirit of ill will in verse 23 that we just read about. And so battles broke out. We're not going to read every one of these verses, but there were battles that broke out between Abimelech and the men of Shechem. And that occupies the rest, starting with verse 24 down to basically down to the end of the chapter. And during this final battle, a woman, as Abimelech was moving about during the continuation of the battle, there was a tower. And basically Abimelech got a little too close to that tower, and we're told that a woman, and it says here in verse 53, but a certain woman dropped an upper millstone on Abimelech's head and crushed his skull. I don't know who the certain woman was, but I guess she was a certain woman, maybe a special woman, because she did what she did. And here's my question, because I don't know and I couldn't find it. Does anyone know what the distinction of an upper millstone might be as opposed to maybe a lower millstone? Pardon? Yeah, that's what my understanding is, and the distinction there, if the upper one was heavier, I have no idea. That's what I sort of assumed, that the upper millstone was larger or heavier, or maybe both, than the lower millstone. But whichever it was, whatever the difference was, that's what she dropped on Abimelech's head and crushed his skull. And I was telling my wife today, I guess from today's culture, people would read this and say that Abimelech was sexist, because he didn't want it to be known that a woman had done this to him. It says he quickly called, a certain woman did this, then he quickly called to the young man, his armor bearer, and said to him, "Draw your sword and kill me, lest men say of me, a woman killed him." So his young man thrust him through, and he died. Now, what a way for a king to go. But I think we could say Abimelech brought this on himself. He usurped a position And that was only the will of God could do that. But he took upon himself, or he convinced the men of Shechem to do this, to name him, appoint him king. King over Israel, although they didn't have the authority to do that for the whole nation of Israel. That's what they presumed to do. And he went through the, not necessarily just through the motions, but he started basically the process of conquering the rest of the nation. And we're not told that he was tremendously successful or almost a failure or whatever, but we know that he got close to this tower, and these people of the city there went up to the top of the tower, and as he drew near the door of the tower, he intended to burn it with fire, and it would kill all the people in it. And that's when the certain woman dropped an upper millstone on his head, crushing his skull. Now, I don't know if that upper millstone was as big and heavy as I picture it being. I doubt he would have lived very long anyway. But he wanted to remove all possibility of that, and he wanted to remove the possibility that people said a woman killed him. He had his armor bearer thrust him through with his sword. In verse 55, we're told that when the men of Israel saw that Abimelech was dead, they departed, every man to his place. We don't see that there was much rejoicing going on there. They had defeated him. They had killed him. So what did the men of Israel do? They just decided it's time for us to go back home. We've done what we set out to do, so we're going back home. Thus God repaid the wickedness of Abimelech, which he had done to his father, by killing his 70 brothers. And all the evil of the men of Shechem God returned on their own heads, and on them came the curse of Jotham, the son of Jerubbaal, Gideon. So the phrase you reap what you sow comes to mind every time I read that. And Abimelech certainly sowed the seeds for the harvest that he realized from all this. Questions or comments before we move forward? Ashley?
Two quick things jump out to me, and I think you hit the nail on the head on one of them on reading what you said, but if you go back to verse 3, that Abimelech was able to pull away the leaders of Shechem just because he was their relative, and how blind they were to just follow him. I think there's a great lesson for us in there.
Yeah.
He let influence us. And then you go to verse 23, and it says, God sent an evil spirit between Abimelech and the men of Shechem. That can give a lot of people heartburn. What in the world does that mean? And I think it's really important to understand when the Bible speaks of God hardening the heart, or God putting an evil spirit, or God working on someone's heart.
Right.
We have to be real careful on putting too much on God working in that. So when I look at passages like that, I think it's important to remember the easier to understand passages, and that God never tempts us with evil. And I think that's key for us to understand that God is not in this place putting an evil spirit between both Abimelech and the men of Shechem. He's not in that, in his hand directly doing that, but because of their hardness of their heart and their desire for evil things, that's why this took place. And that's how it works today, just like it did then.
Absolutely. He caused, and it could be, if you look at this from human standpoint, it could be that these men of Shechem, this was a 3-year period, it didn't just happen overnight, and maybe they started to look at things and saw things in a little bit clearer light. Now, God had caused this spirit of ill will to come up between them, but maybe he caused them to open their eyes a little more, to look at what was happening, and to look at what Abimelech was doing to them. And over time, over this period of 3 years, they weren't all reading from the same page, if you will. And that's what brought this to a conclusion.
It did take away free choice of either.
That's right. It was still their choice, absolutely. God didn't make them do this. But that he did cause that spirit of ill will. He's in control. He could have made them do it. But that's not his nature. That's not the character of God to do that, even though he had the ability. Other questions or comments before we close, huh?
I think it's a great contrast between Gideon, who after he drove out the Midianites, they have said, let's make you king over us, and you rule
let me be your king. I deserve it. What did he do to deserve it? I don't know anything that he did to deserve it, except he was the son of Gideon. Anyone else?
It's also interesting that Abimelech was still known as the woman that threw the upper millstone around his neck, because it's referred to when you had David requesting about the battle, and the messenger from Joab tells him, if he's upset because all these people were killed when we rushed it, you tell him, if that happens, who struck down Abimelech, the son of Jerubbaal? Did not a woman throw above a millstone on him and die?
Absolutely. What Abimelech's wish was there was that people not know that a woman killed him. And if before tonight, if someone had asked me, what do you know about Abimelech? I would have said a woman dropped a millstone on his head and crushed his skull. And what else? And I could have gotten to the point that he was a false king, if you will, of Israel and all that. But the first thing I would say is a woman dropped a millstone on his head. I appreciate your comments and questions. I'm going to be out next week. John's going to have the class, so be sure and get up all the hard questions you can.